Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 6th of October, Anno Domini 2012. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick up your shoes. Don't get the blues. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 1-800-790-0415 while I read today's big news, this week's big news. On an interview with Today Show's Matt Lauer, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg laid down the importance of the mobile web for the company. More people, he says, and this is interesting, more people, he says, use Facebook via its mobile-targeted website than on the iPhone or Android phones combined. He said, iPhone is a great platform. There are more people who use Facebook on Android because Android is just more people use it at this point. And the thing that I think a lot of people don't think about is that there are actually more people in the world using Facebook on mobile web, right? So this is just the way he talks. So not using the apps on iOS or Android, but actually just going to a browser on a phone. There are more people using that than the iPhone and all of the Android phones combined, right? So it's actually a pretty diverse ecosystem. So after pointing out that there are more Android users of Facebook than those who use it on iPhone, he outs the mobile web as larger than both of them put together. Seems fairly ironic considering he has just stated that betting the company completely on HTML5 for its mobile apps was Facebook's biggest strategic mistake in its mobile strategy. Duh. That's not to say that web apps aren't as an important part of Facebook's future, especially within a statistic like the one above. If the mobile web is just serving the majority of users, then they need to juggle a native experience for those platforms with a common mobile web experience that offers a first-class Facebook option as well. Facebook actually has more mobile web designers than either Android or iOS, with the second most tackling Android. That definitely seems to align with its priorities. In July, Facebook announced that its monthly active users were 955 million as of June 30th, and they've gone over a million now. If we do... What?
You said million.
I meant a billion. They have gone over a million. That's very true.
That's way over a million.
Way over a million. A million times over a million. They're at a billion. They're at a billion people. If we do the math based off of those numbers, it means there are at least 271 million monthly active users of Facebook's mobile web app, if not more. Clearly, Facebook has to continue focusing on those mobile web users in some ways. It would be interesting to see the trend graph, though. Are mobile users continuing to transition to native apps on the two major platforms, or have they been moving away from apps like those on iOS, which offer a subpar experience to the mobile web version? So, our question to you at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. How do you use Facebook? Your choices are on a desktop or laptop, on an iPhone or iPad, on an Android phone or tablet, and face what now? So far, we've got approximately 35 votes. Most of you, of course, have said face what now because you don't take this seriously. But that's not all. I know you will have more to say, so when you're done actually taking the poll, check the yellow box underneath, click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com. That's
AskNick.com,
where you can enter your opinion. And so far, we've got three of them there. So then come back and join us here on the show because we have... We have a question to ask you, which is the same one as our poll. How do you access Facebook? That's our question to you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, like you said, mobile web access is Android and iPhone. So is it people using the web browsers that don't know there's apps or don't like there's the apps that are there?
Well, people have been complaining about the iPhone app forever because it's just junk.
Mm-hmm.
The Android app is better, but not good.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, a lot of the problem is theirs. They've written junk. Yep. And so, and people get it. They don't want junk, so they don't use the apps.
I was just listening to a podcast where they were complaining that you're on your mobile device and you go to a website and it stops and says, hey, you should download our mobile app. I don't want to. Let me have the full, especially with Android and iOS, where it can view the full website.
Right.
You know, in the olden days of 2-inch Motorola Qs and Blackberries where you couldn't see a website, that made more sense. But now, let me see the full website.
Well, I don't mind the mobile web if they do it right.
Yeah.
You know, but most people don't, and that's the real problem.
I should turn my mic on.
Yeah, you probably should.
Rob there just went to the dark side and went over to an iPhone. He's got an iPhone 4. So now he's got that for a little while just so he can see, you know, which side he wants to stay at. Either go to the, over to the, you know, Apple or stay with Android.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mine's up in, I think it's February. I can go looking at other phones, but, you know, I'll definitely stick with Android because it was just so simple. And with my Nexus, it just... It's there. I've gotten used to it, and I have no... The only thing I can say for Apple, and I'll give them this, is their battery life rocks.
Their battery life is good, but so is mine. I have, by the end of a day, and I use my phone fairly regularly. I make some calls.
Mm-hmm.
I send a bunch of texts. I send texts all day long. I still have over 50% of my battery life.
Now, which one did you get?
I have the Galaxy Nexus.
Okay.
Samsung Galaxy Nexus.
Oh, okay.
Nexus Prime, because now there's a Nexus 2 and Nexus 3 out.
Yes, that's still Nexus, the Nexus. The iPhone is still the iPhone.
iPhone, yeah. Well, and that's one thing that is probably one of the biggest things in the cell phone market is people like what they're used to, and the average person doesn't switch phones that often, even after their contract runs out, and they can and are eligible for a new phone.
Right.
Because they don't want to have to worry about transferring their contacts, or they don't want to have to learn a new way to do something. And you know, I just got a new phone, and I couldn't find the speakerphone button on it, and I had to look in the manual.
Yeah.
And I was really, really annoyed.
You read the manual?
No, I Googled it, and it came up with
Yeah, okay.
Oh, okay.
Right. Wow.
That's okay.
We were about to revoke your geek for just a moment there. But, yeah, and I agree with you. People get used to what they get used to, and it's less about the magnificence of the platform than the fact that this is the thing they're used to.
Yeah.
You know, I have I don't – particularly care for the way iOS does certain things, but it's not a bad platform. I just prefer the way Android does things. And part of the thing that makes my battery life last so long is I turn off my wireless.
Yep.
When I'm not around wireless signals, I don't do a lot of extraneous surfing. Now that I've got my tablet, I don't do as much extraneous surfing on it. But I make calls and I do a lot of texting. A lot.
Yeah,
of texting.
Same here.
And I end up with over 50% of my battery by the end of the day. And I've also removed some things that were running in the background and stuff like that. So yeah, I don't know. It just works for me. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Brian from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
We're good. How are you?
Oh, I'm just having so much fun.
I should tell you, my wife just told me this morning that you called the other day.
Yeah, I called you more than one thing.
Yeah, you probably did.
Stand in line?
Why. Kind of. I have a home network.
Yeah.
Two computers and two desktops and a laptop.
Right.
And in two different rooms right next to each other.
Yeah.
And I had it set up as a network. It was all working just fine. And then we had new floors put in the two rooms, and Time Warner came out and upgraded my router, changed the router and all like that. I moved things around. I'm trying to reset the network. The computers will talk to each other. Yesterday afternoon, I spent 2 hours, and I finally got the printer to recognize the two desktops. today, I went back, the printer doesn't exist anymore. It just, I don't know what it is. I can't print.
Okay, is the printer connected to one of the computers?
Yes.
Directly?
Yes.
And it does talk to that computer?
No, it doesn't today. It did yesterday.
It won't even print off the computer it's hooked up to?
No. In error, you know, the printer's not there. And okay. If I look at the network map, it's not there.
Okay, it's one of a couple of things. First, make sure that the connections are tight.
Right.
And secondly, make sure the printer's on.
Yeah.
I know you. And thirdly...
Uh-oh.
And thirdly, make sure you've got the right driver installed.
Yep, that's not a problem. Those are all good.
Unplug
I think it's something to do with the name of the group. Because when Time Warner was
that won't affect it from finding it on the computer that it's hooked up to. What version of Windows are you running?
7.
Because Windows 7 should find the printer automatically if it's hooked up directly to that one PC.
Yeah, before we solve the other two computers, we got to solve why it's not even being seen on the computer it's hooked up to directly, physically.
All right, I got to move to the other room.
Yeah, if you unplug the USB cable, wait a few minutes and plug it back in, the USB should auto-detect, and it should say, oh, here's a printer. I already have the driver. Let's just use it.
Yeah, because it's a new HP, a relatively new HP office jet. So I know the drivers are in the queue. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no problem there.
Yeah, that's not the problem. But
7 should just automatically find it.
Yeah, if it's not finding it, it could be a bad cable.
Uh-huh. You'll find it one day and not the next?
Yeah, sure, if there's an intermittent break in the cable.
Do you have pets with sharp teeth?
Yeah. Cart kids.
Didn't your ferrets used to chew your cables, Dave?
Yeah.
No.
Yep.
This one doesn't, thank God.
Yeah.
Small blessing.
Because otherwise he'd be out on the streets.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah. I know that.
Or some other place in the physical universe. Yeah, right.
On the grill? No.
Yeah, well,
so,
you know what my T-shirt says.
Yeah, I know what your T-shirt says. Here's the thing. If the problem we have to solve is the one computer that it's attached to seeing the printer. So if the cables are tight at both ends, if the right driver is installed, is this connected by USB?
Yes.
Okay, then first try plugging into a different USB port.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Like Steve said, unplug it, wait a few minutes, and then plug it into a different USB port and see if it finds it. It could just be that what with moving and this and that, the USB port got broken and
or
it's now not good.
Yeah, blown it. Yeah, I've had PC motherboards blow the USB ports.
Yep.
On the front or back, depending.
Yep.
If you've got a surge.
The machine is only about 6 weeks old.
Right. Well, but that's not.
Anything can happen.
Yeah, but that's exactly. And particularly if in moving it you either unplugged it a little too hard or didn't unplug it while you moved it or whatever, tried to move it as a single unit.
No.
but try plugging it into a different port.
Yeah,
that's the place I'd start, because this is the thing that stumps me. It should be seen on the computer as physically attached.
Well, if he moved it around, the thing of it is like you were saying, if the wire's inside, you know, because on the back of those, they do have some connectors, and if the connector wasn't fully onto the motherboard for hooking up to the USB port, if they're not mounted right on the motherboard, there's usually extras, and there are usually cables that go from there to the motherboard.
Right.
If one of those cables slipped off.
Right, if it walked.
Yeah. I've seen those walk off. If you're moving it around, something else pulled on it, you might have to pull the cover off.
And check at both ends. We've had customers will check it on the computer, but not the printer. Or
right.
Especially if it's a tower on the floor, you can't get down behind.
Right,
well, one of the parts of the project was to move the towers off the floor.
Yeah, it's a very good idea.
And untangle all the wires. I got rid of old wires that I wasn't using anymore, speaker wires and stuff like that.
I do that all the time. You just unplug something and then you just leave it hanging there, thinking, I'll get to it. And then by the time you're done, you've got 50 wires back there and you don't know what the hell goes to what.
Yeah.
So plug it into some place different. Also plug it not just into a different USB port in the back, but if you have USB ports in the front, try one of those.
Yeah, I got like 7 of them.
Right, right.
So it's a fairly new machine.
Right, right. So try one that would not be on the same ribbon cable.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and well, try one in the back first in case it's the actual port.
It hasn't done anything yet. I just changed it over.
Well, you got to wait a couple of minutes before you plug it back in.
Yeah.
And so if it doesn't work in the back, then try it in the front. The second thing to try is unplug it, turn your machine off.
And then turn it on and then turn it off.
And then plug it in.
And then refind it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
That because... Because there's something entirely not right in there. You know that already. But
if it worked, I would say.
Exactly. But the,
right.
But the problem is in that one machine.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it were visible to that machine, getting the other machines to see it would, in fact, be fairly easy.
Yeah.
The problem is that the one machine doesn't see it. So try those things and let us know.
Yeah. What about the home group? Can you change that? I thought you could. You could select a group, a network group.
Yeah, you can change the name of the network group.
Yeah, well, I can't find out where to do that.
Oh, God. In Windows 7?
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yeah.
In systems.
But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Brian.
Yeah.
And all of you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and you have just slid through the first segment of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we have Brian from Rochester, New York on the line.
Oh, yeah.
And you want to know how to change the name of your work group.
Or change to a different work group.
Right.
In Windows 7, you go to your control panels.
Yeah.
And then go to the Network and Sharing Center.
Right.
And you click on the little house icon for your home group.
And I get home. If I click on the house itself, I can change the name. But
yeah.
I can't choose from one that's already there.
You don't.
Yeah, you don't.
You type the new name you want it to be.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a new name. It's a name that's already there.
It doesn't matter. You got to retype it.
You got to retype. So if I...
Yeah, and then they all three computers then have to be within the same group.
Right.
Yep.
And there is a home group wizard where it'll make a disk for you, and then you take that disk to the other computers.
You do the different ones.
Yeah, so you don't have to go into the control panel yourself.
Okay. All right.
And remember, it can't be more than 15 characters, and it can't have any symbols in it.
Correct. Yeah. No, it's a very simple one.
Isn't the default MS Home now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or Workgroup, one of the two.
Workgroup was the old. Now, since Windows Vista, it has been MS Home.
Right. So if you've got an old XP.
All right.
Workgroup.
Yeah. And if you want to just change the Windows 7 to match those, you change Windows 7 to Workgroup.
Although Windows 7 is smart enough that when you're setting it up on an existing network, it looks for the network name and will copy that.
You want to join this network?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm joined to the one I want to be at. That's the one that we set up the other day for the new router.
Mm-hmm.
I'll play and see if that works.
Well, the remaining problem remains that if the one machine can't see the printer, none of the other machines will see the printer. So it doesn't matter what the workgroup name is.
Yeah, you got to search out those USB ports and see what's going on with those.
At the worst, you need to buy yourself another USB cable.
That's possible. All right, we'll see what we can do, gentlemen.
All right, have fun.
It's always something.
It's always something.
And you know, we get questions like this at our store, too. Well, it worked fine yesterday. What happened? Something broke. Everything works fine until it doesn't.
Exactly.
Something broke.
Well, what we often find also is that, particularly when you're doing a thing like moving stuff around, if you had a USB cable, if your machine was on the floor and the USB cable went underneath the desk, it could easily have gotten crushed and broken. And you wouldn't know it from because the sheath is fine.
Right, and it might work and when it's, say, at 180-degree angle, but if it's at 179-degree angle, it won't work.
Right, so it's curving a little differently, and now it's got a problem.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. We see that regularly. I'm not as shocked as I probably should be. All right, our next caller is Judy from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Judy. What's your question?
Hi there. I'm using Microsoft Essentials, and I have it on automatic. So, and it puts a little symbol there, so you can click on that and then go the rest of the way.
Right.
It won't download this particular package. It says the following updates were not installed. And that says Microsoft so-and-so, client update package, KB some so-and-so. What's going on? And I've tried it three times.
What version of Windows are you running?
XP.
It may be that particular... What, do you know the number of that particular...
the KB number.
Yeah, I got it.
Read it, please.
KB275-4296.
Yeah, that's a knowledge base article that is supposed to explain what the differences are. And apparently a lot of people are having trouble installing
that.
Yeah,
a lot
update.
Of people are.
Okay.
So don't worry about it.
Can't get that symbol off, though.
Well, it's for now.
It's telling you there's an update. It doesn't know that you can't install it.
Right.
I have a link I'm posting about some things you can try to do. One of them is to manually download and install that update yourself. Or just wait a few days or a week or so until the next update comes out that fixes it.
Oh, okay. Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, just ignore it for now.
Okay.
Be patient.
If there's been a problem, Microsoft will fix it.
See, because I didn't know what was in it. I didn't know what was in KB274. It doesn't tell you.
Right.
So, and the other question I had was, you said that there should be some more security on your computer other than something like this. What program was that?
There are a couple of things that you should be running. One is an antivirus program.
Which is what Microsoft Security Essentials is.
Right.
Yeah.
If you do not have a firewall on your personal network, then you should be running a firewall on your computer.
Yeah, I have that.
And every once in a while, you should run some other anti-malware stuff because viruses are not the only problems that are out there.
Uh-huh. Like what? Give me a program.
Oh, what program to run? There are a couple. Super anti-spyware is a very good one.
Okay.
So you can run that, and it will catch some things that the regular antivirus software doesn't catch.
That's what I wanted to know.
There you go.
Yeah. So, okay, good. So just great, because I was concerned that there was something in there that I should be putting on my computer that I can't get on it.
It's also... possible, probably not in this case. It's possible that if you do get attacked by some sort of malware, a lot of the malware will stop your anti-malware programs from running.
Oh, boy.
So that's one reason we recommend running the Security Tango every now and then, which is all of the other programs that you can run to clean things out.
That's what I want to.
Yeah.
Well, the Security Tango, is that the name of a program?
If you go to securitytango.com...
Uh-huh.
The Security Tango is a series of computer programs that I put together a number of years ago and have been regularly updating. The whole point of it is that there's way too much stuff out there for any one program to catch it all.
Okay.
So I put together a list of programs, and I call it a tango because if you skip a step, you're not dancing anymore. You're just stumbling around. And similarly, if you skip a step in the Security Tango, you may not protect yourself.
Okay.
So if you go to the Security Tango, across the top, there's a series of menu choices. One is Let's Dance.
Uh-huh.
You pick your operating system from there. There's the Windows Waltz, the Linux Lumbata, the Android Elemand,
okay.
and the Mac Arena. And so you would pick the Windows Waltz. Print out that page. And then follow along and check off everything as you do it.
Okay. Well, the super anti-spyware thing to do about the same thing?
No, that's only a piece of the Security Tango.
Oh, I see.
See, the thing is, you don't have to run the security tango often, but if you feel that you've really got something bad, it runs rkill and unhide and TDSS killer and super anti-spyware and malware bytes anti-malware and AVG or Avast. And it's a bunch of stuff that you run. You put zone alarm, maybe you sting, you try Stinger.
And then you have to check all those ones to do their job.
Well, everything does something a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the fact is that not everything catches everything.
Yeah.
So what I've put together is kind of what you might think of as a broad spectrum antibiotic.
Gotcha. Okay.
A smorgasbord.
And you put that on automatic?
We haven't figured it out yet, although I'm talking with a couple of people who are in the process of doing that. I haven't done it myself, no.
That's okay. So, but if I do that, then the add and remove program section on your computer will show all those different ones once you run them.
Yes.
Good. Okay. All right, I'll try that.
Okay, there you go.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Yeah. So this update from Microsoft was the September update for Security Essentials.
Right.
I would have thought the October update would be out by now.
Well, you would think so.
I would have thought.
Yes.
But it's not the second Tuesday in October
yet.
It's
not the second Tuesday. It's not even the...
Next week is the second Tuesday, right? Because the first was a Monday.
I don't know when the first was.
How quick can we
open the calendar? Not coming up.
Today's the 6th. Counting backwards.
If today's the 6th,
yes,
then Tuesday
this next
was
week
the
is the second Tuesday. Yeah, because it's next week is the Apple Cider meeting.
Right.
And the PC, I keep saying PC cubed.
It's RCSI, the Rational Computer Society Incorporated.
Yeah, second Tuesday of the month for them, second Wednesday of the month for the Apple Cider meeting. We actually have Adam Angst from Tidbits Publishing coming in to talk to us about digital copyright and really cool things about some of the stuff that some of the books that he's written and how to protect your digital life. So if you publish something, to make sure other people don't try to steal it.
Yep. One of the things we're seeing right now that's huge is what happens with your digital existence when you pass?
Yeah.
What happens to your Facebook page? What happens to your Twitter feed? What happens to your Google Plus, your Pinterest, all those other things? What happens to them? Who's authorized to go into them? Where do they get the information?
You need to add a list of passwords to your will.
Well, exactly. And then who do you trust with that list of passwords?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never thought about that. Well, Lori wasn't into the Facebook thing. But, you know, there was a lot of other sites that, you know, as stuff comes in, I've had to... email them back and say, please remove, you know, mm-hmm. Lori's no longer
right.
with us.
Well, that's a little different,
yeah.
Right? If it's Facebook or Twitter, that account could exist for years.
Yeah.
Forever, as far as I know, and just be there. How do you close that account? How do you let the people that she only knew through Facebook, who you may never have met,
right?
How do you let them know? It's a very weird situation we find ourselves in.
You have to add that to the procedure. When my father passed away a couple of years ago, we had to go through bank accounts and stocks and mutual funds. And I forget how many copies of the death certificate we needed to keep passing out to these people to say he's passed and we're moving everything to my mom now. And so now you just have to add your email passwords and close your different accounts. And there was a story in the news a couple of weeks ago that turned out to be a false rumor, but Bruce Willis was wondering about his iTunes songs.
Right.
Stuff you've purchased online, you've purchased with your ID and password. What happens when you pass? Who gets that electronic data?
Who does?
The law doesn't know yet.
Right. But Apple, not just Apple, but all those people are saying nobody gets it.
Yeah.
Because you didn't buy it, you only rented it.
Yeah. So you rented a license to play it, and theoretically, depending on the wording in the contracts, that would pass to your heirs. But that, again, you have to leave your ID and password with somebody that passes it down. So you got to have a lawyer you trust and keep around until you pass.
That's exactly right. It's a weird situation, isn't it?
That reminds me of that joke. Kid goes up to his father and says, "Hey, Hop Sing, am I adopted? He goes, "No, you rented."
Rent, you rent your kids, and you pay society for keeping them for a while, and you pay them a lot of money, as a matter of fact.
No lie.
No lie. My goodness, that's some amazing stuff.
Did you see the Joya Tutt cartoon about Facebook's billion people breakdown? A couple of days ago, 167 million of them are accounts that Zuckerberg created with bots. 7,000 are accounts that the Winklevoss twins have created.
There you go.
That Zuckerberg's bots try to kill.
Right.
And so the bottom line is that makes me feel a lot better. I thought a billion people wasting their time on Facebook was depressing. The actual real accounts, that's only a few hundred thousand.
Right. A billion sounds like a big number, but the real big number, to paraphrase Facebook, a billion's not cool. You know what's cool? 140 billion. There are 140 billion connections in Facebook. People connected to other people, friending other people. 140 billion of those.
And 6 degrees is a lot smaller now.
Yeah. 140 billion people. Connections, rather. All right, Wednesday, as President Barack Obama and Governor Mitt Romney were preparing to debate how to fix the country's economic mess, Hewlett-Packard CEO Meg Whitman was delivering a stunning confessional speech at HP's analyst briefing day, describing how bad things were at HP and making promises to fix them. She projected that the company would continue its headlong plunge in profits for at least another year, with a full rebound not in sight until 2016. Showing shades of her previous political aspirations, Whitman liberally mixed metaphors to describe her awakening to just how screwed HP was. "We all hope we can accelerate the timing of this journey, but as I see the challenges up close and personal, there are no silver bullets," she said. "It's going to take longer to right this ship than any of us would like." Not all of HP's product lines or the people who make them will survive the journey, Whitman outlined. There will be some serious pruning of HP's businesses and a focus on automating more of manufacturing and eliminating workers. And even with new products in the pipeline, Whitman said 2013 is going to be a rebuilding year as the company retools practically everything it does. 2014 will be the year you see real recovery and expansion, she promised. The new products and services we've been working on will kick in big time in 2014. Whitman put the bulk of the blame for the company's position on the mismanagement of her predecessors. The single biggest challenge facing HP, she said, has been the multiple changes in HP's leadership, which caused inconsistent strategic choices and some significant execution miscues.
It's the last guy's fault.
Exactly. Although shuffling at the top led to a deficit of actual leadership within the company. The lack of central leadership left individual units to figure out things for themselves. The company's marketing, totally uncoordinated. Its service unit, directionless from 4 changes in the top in as many years, and hurting from changes in the sales force. Its products, too many, too slow delivered, poorly packaged. Managerial accountability, what is that? Apparently, people at HP spent so much time changing offices that nobody ever got around to actually measuring what the company did. Whitman said there were no real metrics for measuring performance or providing early warnings, and top management had been essentially flying blind. "I've learned at HP, you don't get what you expect," Whitman said. "You get what you inspect," which is actually kind of nice.
Yeah.
So, do you think HP can turn it around? You can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We are going to take a quick break while you dial that phone. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're Soundbites, right here on the truly great member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. So we were talking about HP when we took our little break. And I'll tell you what, I have always been impressed by HP's hardware, never been impressed by their software. No, that's not even true. I've always been impressed by HP's printer hardware.
Right. Yeah. It's the software that takes forever.
Their software is horrifying. It's horrifying.
It tries to do too much, which makes it slow.
The fact that it tries to do anything angers me. But yes, it tries to do everything all at once, and it does it very badly. But equally importantly, when they took over Compaq, I used to love Compaq servers.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow, you could beat them with a stick. Yep. And they would just keep on ticking. And then when they took them over, just they were not nearly as good.
Well, again, they don't put much into it. It's just like they're printer drivers. Yeah. I don't think from day one they just sort of took the original code and just patched it to add this driver or that driver to do its thing. Right. And never rewrote it to be efficient. And, you know, I had to sit there forever and a day just installing all their stuff.
Right. Right. And you're right. I think they patched on top of patch on top of patch. And as opposed to somebody sitting down and saying, let's make the best, fastest, cleanest, streamlinedest printer driver we can, they just had a checkbox, printer driver.
Done. And that's probably how they saved money, or thinking sure. They're saving money.
Sure. Sure. But it was terrible. It their software is horrifyingly bad. I'm sorry.
You can start it, go get a cup of coffee, sit there and have a conversation, come back, and it's maybe... 4 out of 14 done, and you've already been sitting there for over 20 minutes.
I never install anything but the printer driver. I never install any of that other software.
A lot of these folks, you know, because they supply
they
the disk.
That's
they
exactly
the,
right.
Next.
Right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I get it. It's really nice to have the computer tell you, oh, you're out of magenta. I do get that.
But you can usually tell that when it stops printing.
It stops printing magenta. I have a real issue with a lot of that stuff, and HP had some laptops not high quality, handhelds not high quality, and over the years they've just lost focus. I mean, I guess it's, you know, I guess there's something to be said for being a mid-level executive in a company where absolutely nobody cares what you do, I suppose, if you're that type of person.
Yeah.
I'm not. But if you are, good for you.
I don't know if it's good for you.
Well, right. But it comes to bite you in the butt in the long run.
Exactly. And you're going to tick people off.
The name HP used to be very, very high-end, and I still do like their printers.
No, I've got two laser printers, and I've got an old DeskJet 952 that prints great color stuff that
work,
I want. I don't do
forever.
Photos. I don't do photos because now everything – I've got a digital frame.
Yeah, right.
And I just move pictures over to that.
Right.
Talk to my wife. She wants to print every single photo.
Get her a bigger digital frame. Yeah. Do a, 8x10 or 11x14.
She wants to have photo books. She's old school.
She's old school.
I keep telling her I don't want to spend that much money on prints.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I buy her ink and paper, her printer now and then, and then she doesn't get to it, and I can say, oh, well,
If you print them,
I got you, yeah.
Right,
but then
right.
The ink dries out, and I got to replace it.
And you got to replace the printer sometimes because yeah. It clogs the head.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Speaking of printer inks, I just read this week that Kodak, which shut down their printer manufacturing lines, they stopped selling printers. They're still going to sell the ink for a few more years. So if you do have a Kodak printer, you'll still be able to buy ink for a while.
I'd say third party will be selling them for a good while, too.
Yep.
But yeah, those, again, Kodak on their printers, the high-end one was good. The bottom and the middle were junk. They were junk. Constantly replacing stuff.
Right. And these days, you can't make money just selling to big businesses. You need to be able to sell to the mid-sized businesses and the low end, to the home and individual user.
Yep.
If you can capture that market, if you can create that ecosystem, you know, Kodak had the ability to create an ecosystem. They had the camera, the printer, and the website.
Yep.
And it never caught fire. And I guess I have to ask, did it not catch fire because there was something inherently wrong with the model, or did they just not handle it properly? Because I can't imagine that had they done it right. I mean, there is, of course, the point that all of a sudden every cell phone in America had a camera in it. But they could have been that camera.
Yep.
You know, somebody could have said, oh, I would love to have this be your camera. Use Kodak camera in your phone. That could have been done. That could have happened.
And Kodak was the name in cameras for
so long.
Well,
that's the point.
Well, and that's part of the problem. They didn't switch to digital soon enough.
Right.
And their traditional film camera sales, where you made a lot of money on film processing, They didn't switch over to digital, where you make no money on processing. You have to make your money on the camera.
Yeah. And had they maintained that, it would have been very easy to go to somebody like Apple, who, when Steve Jobs was creating the iPhone, wanted the best of everything.
Yep.
To be able to say, you got a Kodak camera in your phone. Boom.
Yep.
You know? Oh, well. Listen, we're going to go back to the phones. We're going to talk to George from Albion, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm not from Albion. I'm from Auburn.
Auburn. I beg your pardon. A-L-B-E-A-R-N.
A-U.
Well, that's, I'm just looking at the way spelled it.
All right.
I'm just saying that's
I know.
Why...
Who took my map away? There it is.
Okay, there you go. Go ahead. What's your question, George?
Not a question. I'm just going to reinforce what you were talking about on that USB for the printer.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a real nice HP printer, and every once in a while, my daughter would have problems with it, and I'd mess around with it, and it'd start working. And then I realized what was happening. The weight of the cable had to be deforming the connector on the back of the printer.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then, I have to go back there and just mess with it so that it makes contact again. So you're absolutely correct. His problem is probably the cable. More than likely, if they move that just a little bit before pulling out that USB cable, they might have deformed the back of the printer itself, the connection to the back of the printer.
Yep.
And that is annoying because I never really... It's just the weight of the cable that did it. Probably had too much tension on it and messed it up.
Yeah, USB is way more delicate than people think. I worry every time I plug in and out my Galaxy Nexus. So every once in a while, I'm tired and it's late, and I just start to plug in, and I realize I'm jamming it in badly.
And the other thing you said is everything is brand new.
Mm-hmm.
That's a guarantee of a problem.
Yeah.
That's when you know for sure that very possibly you have a bad component someplace in there.
Right, right, right.
That's when you're going to find it, when it's brand new.
Yep, it's the infant mortality rate of the hardware. I get that.
That I've got a tower. It's got a fantastic board on the front of the tower. It's got audio. It's got USB. It's got a connector for hard drive.
Yeah.
And this is the second board I put in. The first one would just shut the computer down, reboot it. This one now locks up the computer. So the board is bad itself. They've got a bad design someplace or a component that's weak on the board. I got to replace it again.
What you want to check, though? Check the heat sink. Check the heat sink on the CPU.
That would be an issue. This is a water-cooled.
Oh, well, la-di-da for you, then.
But it's still got paste on there. Make sure...
There could be a problem there, but it's been. I've had it back to the where I bought it, and they've took it apart, cleaned it, and they had to replace replaced the power supply on it, and they also replaced the board. So, but it's I love the computer. It's just that the more you buy, the more fussy they can be.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I just thought I'd throw that out because
no, I appreciate that.
It seemed like he was going to discount your admission to check that cable and check the connectors.
Yeah, no, he'll do it. I know he will.
But that's
if only can he lord it over me later when it doesn't work.
It's either a bad cable or a bad connection, and if it's on the printer, sorry about that.
Well, exactly right. That becomes the second part of the issue, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What we find a lot of times is, for I guess it makes sense to the designers, but all the USB ports are always on the back of the printer. So if you happen to jam that printer a little tight against the wall,
which everyone does,
you can seriously screw up that port.
Or just put a little bit too weight on that cable.
Yeah.
Now you're bending the printer connector.
Yep.
I think what mine now is just loose enough to where it's kind of arcs a little bit, you might say, and it corrodes the contacts, because all I have to do is go back there and run it in and out a few times.
Yep.
Yep. And I can hear it come back on.
Yep.
So it's a combination of things now. And I'm sure over time I'm either going to have to, I don't know what I can do to the connector itself. It's probably not worth it to spend money on it, just buy a new printer.
Well, that's the way to do it. It really is. I mean, the cost of replacing the USB connector is a significant portion, considering the fiddly little soldering and unsoldering that has to go on, is a significant portion of buying a new printer.
Right. Well, even now we're talking a printer. What do you call it? A laser jet.
Right.
Okay. And it's got a fuser section.
Yep.
And to replace a simple thing like a fuser roller.
Yep.
Buy a new printer.
Yep. That's exactly
they
right.
Become disposable.
Fuser roller. They have
just
become disposable.
A hollow tube of aluminum with a coating on it.
Yep.
That's pathetic. When you can't. It's cheaper to buy a new printer than it is to replace the roller.
Well, you know, back in the day, I mean, I was just thinking this as you were talking. Back in the day, we had the Centronics connector. And it was this giant freaking connector with multiple pins. If you bent one, you took a plier and unbent it because they were way over-designed.
Although the third or fourth time you did that, it would snap off.
But that the third or fourth time you did that. And once you had it plugged in, you could screw it down.
Yep.
Right.
So
and
you
also
could.
You had the other type where it's they had a little wire
little
snapped on
things,
the back that held it in place.
Yeah, exactly. But so, you know, if you accidentally jerked on that cable, all you did was move the whole printer.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? But it didn't damage anything. But now.
Yeah, it's been the market pressure to drive costs down. Everything is being made cheaper and cheaper, which makes the replacement parts more expensive. We were looking at HDMI cables this week at the store. We've been stocking 6-foot cables. You know, that's a nice length. But some people want something shorter because their thing is right next to the TV. So we look at 3-foot cables. They cost twice as much as a 6-foot cable.
Yep.
You pay more to get shorter.
Yep.
There's a fixed cost of those HDMI connectors, and it doesn't matter how long the cable is between them. You got to pay, you know, that 10 bucks for the smallest cable.
Yep. And the same thing is true of printers. You know, we used to have inkjet printers, dot matrix printers. If something went wrong with that printer, it was usually the print head. You pulled it out and replaced the whole print head,
which was probably a couple $100, but you paid $500-$600 for the printer.
Right. They were like $100. I mean, it was not a hugely. It was 20% of the cost of the printer.
Yeah.
Now, if you try to replace some of that stuff, it's way more significant portion of the printer and way more pain in the neck because you can't just snap a piece out and snap a piece in. You have to actually know a lot more about the way the thing is created.
And that's back to HP for a minute. That's some of the HP's printers, the ink and the heads are separate consumables.
Yeah.
Which is nice because then you can replace one or the other, but it makes them more expensive because you have to replace two things.
Right.
Well, and people want cheap.
And with them going to the cartridge where it just disperses from there as opposed to the old feed the line of, you know, ink, which would dry up and clog, and then you're trying to get those lines. That was a good thing that they got away from that on the print heads.
Yep.
Oh, they don't dry out anymore?
Well,
they don't have those tubes full of ink.
They don't have the tubes. They're coming directly out of the cartridge due to the sensors. You'll look at when you pull a cartridge out now, it's got like a little micro a circuit board on it.
Yeah.
And that's the signal that tells it how much, you know, of a certain hue and everything else. Through bits and that to use, you know, whether you want real yellow or a pale yellow or an orange or whatever.
Wow.
It works with that, telling it what combinations.
I went to a toner type because my cartridges kept drying out. And I just 99.9% of the time I'm doing just black.
Yeah, the laser toner is much cheaper in consumable in the long run, but the printers cost more to start with. And people don't look at the long run. They only look at the starting cost.
Right. Well, I lucked out. I got mail order toner.
Yeah.
Oh.
And as long as it works, a lot of the printers now, you can't use third-party cartridges. They will reject them because they don't have the authorization in them. Same thing with the new
chips,
plugs for the new Apple products. Listen, George, we got to go.
Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you. Thanks for calling. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but don't worry. You've only wasted 1 hour on this show. There's a whole nother hour for you to waste coming up with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you're only halfway through this edition of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Bytes on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of Soundbites. And before we get to the questions, we had an off-air question. And before we get to that or any of more phone calls, I am going to read another news article. Ever had a video taken down on YouTube because a copyright holder claimed you were using some of their footage without permission? As of Wednesday, you've got one extra shot at appealing that decision. Previously, if you believed your video did not infringe on copyright content, you could file a dispute with the video giant. But if the rights holder disputed your dispute, you were fresh out of luck. The video stayed down. Now YouTube has added a second and third layer to the process, the appeal. If a content holder still insists you're using their material without permission after you appeal, they have to go the extra mile and file a DMCA takedown notice. In the meantime, your video goes back up. If you appeal that takedown notice, the copyright holder will have to take the case to court, but you'll also have one strike against you on YouTube. Three strikes and you're out of the service. The trouble with the previous system was that too many good videos were being taken down automatically, even without the copyright holder necessarily wishing it. One infamous example, when the Mars Curiosity rover landed on the Red Planet in August, the official NASA video of the landing was taken down because Scripps News Service had uploaded their video first, and it contained some of the freely available NASA footage. And Scripps complained that they had their copyright violated. Scripps later withdrew the complaint, which had likely been filed by an overzealous producer, they said. YouTube says it's improved its copyright detection algorithm to prevent that kind of outcome in the first place. The system still isn't entirely equitable. It costs nothing for a rights holder to indiscriminately file a DMCA takedown notice, whereas the user gets an automatic strike against them. So much for innocent until proven guilty, but the hope is that more steps in the process means more opportunity to sort the genuine complaints from the NASA video situations. There's still a lot of work ahead of us. YouTube rights manager and producer Tabet Talbot acknowledges, but we believe that these are significant steps forward in our effort to keep YouTube a vibrant place. With the right blah, blah, blah. Who cares? How do you think YouTube should handle copyright violations? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And we had an off-air question.
Yes, the gentleman wanted us to talk about, he takes his laptop and goes to a hotel, you know, when he's out of town. Sure. On hotels, or say out in, say over Park Avenue, one of the restaurants, and they have the free Wi-Fi.
Free Wi-Fi.
Easy for me to say.
Apparently
free
not.
Wi-Fi, you know, out there to use.
Yep.
And doing banking.
Yep.
What should he be aware of?
Well, the first thing you should be aware of, anonymous caller, is that you need to be on a secure connection. So never go to your bank with an HTTP connection. Always make sure that up at the top it says HTTPS for secure. If you go with a secure connection, you're good to go. You won't have any trouble. You can do all the banking you need to do. And unless somebody is running a very high-powered computer, they're not, and really is targeting you, they're not going to be able to get at your stuff. And by high powered, I mean something that you wouldn't normally find on the average laptop. And that's true of everywhere you go. If you're in a hotel, if you're wherever you are, if you're using their wireless connection, in fact, even if you're using their wired connection, because you don't know what they're connecting through, always use HTTPS to go anywhere that you put in a password. Bank, Facebook, Google+, Twitter, everywhere that you put in a password, make sure you're using HTTPS or don't go there. That's the only way you know you're going to be safe and secure.
Pretty much, yep. And most of the time your web browser will turn your URL green.
Right.
Or you get a little green box somewhere to also show you that you're on a high security website. And you often see a little padlock icon in the browser, too, to make sure that you're actually on a secure website. So what that HTTPS does is it securely encrypts the data on your computer before it sends it out over the public internet. And then your bank at the other end decrypts the data so they can handle it for you.
Right. So the only thing that goes over the network is encrypted information. And depending on how good, high quality the encryption is from your bank determines on how long it would take somebody to break that encryption. It could be weeks. It could be years. It could be decades.
What's interesting is that you see on the TV all the time about, you know, the good guys will type a couple of commands and break your encryption in a few seconds. Generally speaking, you cannot break encryption. All you can do is guess the password. So when you're typing your passwords into the bank, you want to make sure you've created a pretty good password.
Right. And as we've been saying for a while, passwords are no longer, it's no longer how complex they are. That's not necessarily a bad thing to keep them complex. And by complex, I mean letters, numbers, symbols, spaces, uppercase and lowercase. That's not bad, but what's even more important than complexity is length.
And it doesn't have to be a random series of letters and numbers to be complex, because you never remember that, so you write it down and that's bad. So just having a long password, we've mentioned this a few times, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. That's a very, very long password that will be difficult for a computer to guess through brute force.
Particularly if you add an exclamation point and a number.
Right. Use a zero instead of an O.
Right.
For things like that, yeah. So it's a very, very long password, but very easy for you to remember. And we also recommend you don't use the same password on multiple websites, because if someone does guess one of your passwords, then they'll try your Facebook and Twitter and Citibank and PayPal and Amazon and, right, and hope you have the same password. So some people, an interesting idea is to use the site you're on as part of your password. It was the best of times, Amazon. It was the worst of times. And now you have an even longer password, and you can remember how you you encoded and what site that password is for.
And pick something that you will remember and make it different for every website. As Steve said, putting the name somewhere in the middle, but never at the beginning or the end, because that's easy to check for.
Yep.
Putting it somewhere not quite in the middle is probably best. So, you know, if your password was Winnie the Pooh and Tigger 2 with an ampersand for and a two, a number two for the word two, and an exclamation point, and capital letters for Winnie and Pooh and Tigger, you've got a pretty complex but easy to remember password. And if you added the name of the company in the middle there, Winnie the Pooh and Amazon Tigger 2, you would have a long, complex, unique password for each of your places, but yep, one that's easy for you to remember. And that's what it really boils down to. Easy for you, difficult for them. That's the plan. We've had horror stories about people with passwords, people who have used the same password on everything. Facebook is essentially a sieve. Getting information from Facebook is ridiculously simple. So certainly never use your Facebook password anywhere else, ever, ever, ever.
And sometimes even the forgot your password links. Was it Matt Honan a couple of weeks ago published his story? He's a Wired magazine author, a writer. And when sites ask for your security questions, you know, what's your mother's maiden name? Don't use that one because that's easy to guess. And sometimes you cross-link. So when you create your Google account, you might use your Yahoo password as a recovery password. And when you created your Yahoo password, you use your Google account. So someone was able to guess one of his passwords and then went through a forgot your password on another site. So they ended up breaking into his iCloud account, his iTunes account, his Gmail account, and his Twitter account, which apparently they were after his Twitter account. So they tweeted as Wired Magazine.
Right.
And so by having cross-linked passwords, and then the one thing that he was really mad about is apparently they did some social engineering that they got an was it his Amazon password? One of his passwords, it said the credit card ending in 2346, and they were able to call the company up and say, I can't remember my password. My credit card ends in 2346. And they said, okay, we'll reset it for you. What do you want it to be? So it's the social engineering. Hi, I'm Bill from Tech Support. I need your password. And people give them their password.
Yeah, they do. The other thing to remember is if you're going to use those security questions, answer them wrong. What's your favorite TV show? Chocolate. What's your favorite food? The Big Bang Theory. Well, there's nothing that says you have to answer them correctly. And the more off you make your answer, the more difficult it is to guess. So you know my favorite TV show is The Big Bang Theory. It's not, by the way, but I like The Big Bang Theory. I like The Big Bang Theory. It's just not my favorite show on television. Anyway, the point here I'm trying to make is, if let's say everybody knows that and I'm posting all the time about The Big Bang Theory. So you go in and you say, well, you have to answer your security question. What's your favorite TV show? And they'll put in The Big Bang Theory. Duh. But if the answer I gave was chocolate, they're probably never going to guess that. No matter how many TV shows they know I like, they're never going to guess the answer chocolate. So always screw up the questions. Answer something different. And there are things like KeePass that let you write those down securely and encrypt them on your machine. So you remember the password to unencrypt that, and you can re-answer your security questions anytime you have to.
Yeah, we had a I had a problem ages ago when I used to work for AOL as a forum host, yeah. Helping people online. Someone broke.
Oh, everybody wanted your password because you had a free account.
I had a free account, yeah. So someone was able to guess my password through some social engineering. Well, cause my password was in Chinese, so that would have been tricky to guess anyway. Was able to get into my account. They changed my security question. The question was, who's the Secretary of State? And the answer they put was Pee Wee Herman. So when I called AOL to get back into my account, I had trouble because my security answers didn't match.
Right.
And so and that was a mess because I had to send them a copy of my check that the account was billed against, but I'd had a free account for so many years, I didn't remember what checking account I used 10 years ago. So I finally did get back in, but so that's the bad guys do these things too. They lie on those answers, so when you try to call the company up to get back into your account, you can't because your answers don't match.
Right. And it can happen to anybody. Any one of us can have something like that happen, and not from our end, but from the other end. As Steve said, if they can get one piece of information about you, they now have that pry bar that rips up all the other pieces of information. So you need to be very careful, but one way you help protect yourself is by using different passwords everywhere and by lying about the security answers. My wife just gave me she puts cartoons in my lunch, and there's one from Peraro who puts out a cartoon called Bizarro. And it's a dad and a little kid and a tiny little puppy. And the dad is saying, now, you're going to have to name him yourself, son. And be careful what you name him, because you'll be using that name for the rest of your life as a security question.
Yep. What was your first pet?
Yep. All right. Our next caller is Alan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Alan. What's your question?
Hey, Nick. Hey, guys. Hey, and you made me laugh with the first pet name, because I never do that.
Good.
Hey, well, maybe once and twice.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Hey, just a quick question for you, and I'm going to take you a little deeper into your topic of security and passwords. For a long time, I used PGP.
You sure?
And loved it, and it's great. And unfortunately, it's got taken over by somebody who shall remain nameless, and they've sort of gone astray.
Yeah, it wasn't Symantec, was it?
Maven.
Symantec tends to buy companies and then kills them.
Yeah, it used to be Computer Associates was always the bad guy, but now it's Symantec.
Yep.
Anywho, so I can't use PGP on Windows 7, at least not without paying an outrageous fee every year.
Right.
So I'm sort of wandering around in the morass of who do I find that I can trust now? And you mentioned KeePass, and one of the things that I liked about PGP is that the author put together a terrific white paper, which makes great reading for anybody who's interested in that area about passwords and public keys, etc. But one of the things he pointed out is that really good security that you can trust means that someone's taken that package and put it out in the public and said, go attack it.
Yes, I agree with you.
And so KeePass sounds interesting, but I'm wondering, is there anywhere that I can go to check to say, oh, yeah, some of the experts have gone after this with hammer and tong, and it has not broken?
Why, yes. If you were a fan of PGP,
yeah,
you might be a fan of GPG.
The okay.
GNU Privacy Guard. It's an open and completely free implementation of the Open PGP standard, which has its own RFC definition. And you can encrypt and sign your data and communications. It's got its own key management system and then all the access modules and public key directories and all the other stuff that GPG had, the PGP had. And we'll talk more about this when we come back, so stay on the line.
Will do.
All right. We are going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, our friend Alan, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve, next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we have Alan on the line. Are you still there?
I sure am, guys.
Excellent. So the GPG, the GNU Privacy Guard, is an implementation of the OpenPGP standard. OpenPGP was originally derived from PGP, which is, of course, created by Phil Zimmerman in 91, and that's the thing you were looking at.
Which is pretty good privacy for those of us that don't know acronyms.
Yep. And it's actually part of the Internet Engineering Task Force proposed standard. And so it's a real thing, and it's a group of companies and other organizations that are implementing the Open PGP standard, and it's actually still a proposed standard. But GNU Privacy Guard, GPG at gpg.org, is an implementation of that. It works really very nicely, actually. It's free software, of course. So you can do it. There's a 1.4.2 version, and then there's the 2.0.19 version, which is a little more difficult to use. There's a PGP for Win, which provides Windows versions. There's the GPG tools for OS 10, and there's a project Egyptian, which is actually spelled AEGYPTEN, for secure mail with GPG2. So pretty easy stuff to actually get eventually running, and it's pretty nice stuff. Give it a look.
I will do that. Thank you. And I also want to dig in again. Is my big concern is that this has been put out, and you know, really someone's really gone after it and tried to break it.
Yep, and this is an open standard and has been vetted by a million eyes.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you, gentlemen. I'm just, you know, one of those worrywarts. You put all your eggs in one basket or under one set of protection, and you got to make sure it's good stuff.
No, I'm with you. I'm a belt and suspenders kind of guy when it comes to this stuff. Absolutely.
Well, thanks again. Appreciate your help and wisdom on that.
Yep, thanks, Al.
Take care.
And he's absolutely right. The reality is that the more eyeballs on a project, the simpler the problems mm-hmm. become. And that was the whole idea behind open source software. So even though we're talking about encryption, and you would think that secrecy is better. The reality is that the more people who see it, the more people who see the problems, fix the problems, and therefore it's actually more secure than a secret version where there are lots of holes, mm-hmm. and if you find one, there's nobody to fix them.
Exactly. Got more hands in the pot, and in this case, it's a good thing.
Yep.
Because there's stuff, and programmers have a habit of doing that. You know what I mean? They'll overlook some stuff because it makes sense to them in their mind when they're writing the code, but it could have some flaws.
Yep.
One of the things I've been worried about lately is that oftentimes when one of these security researchers finds a bug in the program, especially open source programs, they usually fix it themselves and then say, here, I found this, and here's the fix.
Yep.
Google has a bug bounty, and many other companies do also. If you find a bug in their software, you tell them, and they'll pay you. There's also security conferences, like the Pwn to Own conference, where if you show an exploit of a bug, you might win money, win prizes, win the computer you broke into. So I've been afraid that some of these less than perfectly reputable security researchers will hold on to the bugs they find and not tell anyone until they can go to the conference and win the prize. And I don't know how good that is for the community.
No, I agree with you. Because what has happened at least once or twice is that in fact, a zero-day exploit has come out, and then somebody has actually said, you know, I was going to talk about this at the conference, and now I'm just giving you the solution because it's out there.
Yeah, there's a zero-day exploit. There's a conference in 3 months I'm going to talk about it at and show you how to fix it, but I'm not going to show you now.
Right, right. It's a legitimate concern.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, our next caller, Joanne from Greece, New York. Welcome, Joanne. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Yes, I heard that Time Warner was going to start charging a monthly fee for the use of their modem. So I wanted to get, or if they even make, a modem and wireless router all in one unit, and what would be a good one to purchase.
Don't they already charge?
Well, they hide the rental of their modem in the fee you regularly pay. Frontier, for several years now, has listed their DSL modem as a separate charge on your account, where mm-hmm. Time Warner is just buried in that $40 a month you pay for your internet service. I was just reading about that in our forums, actually, on the Soundbites forums, and there's two issues involved. One is that your yes, they are going to start charging a rental fee. I think it's like $3 a month, so it's not that much. You can buy your own cable router. Most of the electronic stores have them, and I haven't found it yet, but I've been looking. Time Warner apparently has a list on their website of approved cable routers.
Oh, okay.
The other thing Time Warner is doing is that they say starting about October 10th, which is next week, and it hasn't been that big of a news yet, they're going to stop delivering analog television channels. So if you have a cable-ready television that doesn't have a Time Warner box on it,
mm-hmm.
some of the channels are going to stop working.
Right.
Until you get one of they're calling them digital adapters. Right now, they'll give you a couple of them for free, but in 2014, they'll start charging 99 cents a month for those.
Mm.
Which, that's the olden days of cable TV. You had to have a cable box on every television until they started building them into the TVs.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sort of back to that arena again. So both that analog television adapter and the
now,
cable router
if I
adapter.
Have, does that mean I have to have a digital cable box?
No. You need a digital adapter to display digital channels on your analog television. So in essence, it is a little tiny digital box, but it's not the full digital cable.
If I've got a cable box and it's on my television, but my television is an old...
That cable box is already the digital adapter.
Okay.
These digital adapters are only for televisions that you do not have a Time Warner box on. The cable coax cable just plugs right into the TV itself. You're going to start needing a box for some of those analog channels.
Hmm. Boy, they got the market wrapped up, don't they?
Well, you can switch to Dish or you can switch to broadcast antenna. So they say, no, we're not a monopoly.
But the back to the modem router. The latest and greatest router, is that an N as in Nancy or G as in
Well, that's wireless. That's completely
wireless
different.
Wireless router, yes. That's what I need, a wireless router with a modem built in.
You need a cable router with wireless built in.
Okay.
And wireless N is the current standard. The next standard that is starting to come down is AC.
Okay.
And we've started seeing new devices that are using the new AC standard, but N is the current ratified standard.
Okay. All right, great.
And thank as soon you. As I can find the link for Time Warner's list of approved routers, we'll get it on our link list.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, actually, they're really...
we're not on Roadrunner at the moment, so we can't get into Roadrunner services here. might have to wait till I get home.
Yeah.
Actually, let me go back to the forums. One of the guys in the forums had posted a link to a cable router that Time Warner was approved. Motorola is one of the biggest companies that make routers, Motorola and Cisco. Generally speaking, the cable router standard is called DOCSIS, D-O-C-I-S, and a DOCSIS 3 router should be fine, but I want to make sure I find this list, because if you buy a router that's not compatible...
Too bad.
Too bad, yeah. You have to return it and get a different one.
And at $3 a month, that's a lot of months before you're paying for that your own cable router.
Cable routers, they're probably like $100.
But that begs the question, though. If the price was already in there...
Well, because they're getting sneaky. They're not raising the price of cable television. They're adding a fee for your modem.
Right. It's an entirely different thing.
So... Again, I they say it was, and you would have so no, that's included in the price. All right. So now that they're going to charge separate, does that mean the original price of the cable bill should come down, and then you should just see the separate fee?
It's the
and
same
it should
thing,
balance out the same thing.
It's the same thing Ma Bell did. We used to get the phones for free, then we had to start buying our own phones, and it was not an extra. It was not a raising of the fee. For phone service, it was just a different charge entirely. Legally, that's how they get around.
Sort of like the government
we're not
doing,
allowed to raise our fees.
And the people
sort of like
that,
the government was doing their surcharges.
Yeah.
You had the fine, and then there's a surcharge.
Right.
They don't tell you what surcharge does. It's just a surcharge, and where the heck the money goes? To surcharge land, I guess.
Yep.
Well, when I took a cab in Chicago last week, the fee was it was only a few blocks, but of course I walk with a cane, so I took the cab. It was $5.95 plus a dollar extra fee.
Yeah, it's
that's
miles.
What it said.
It's
extra
miles and
fee.
Minutes, and then whatever else we can charge you extra.
Yeah, a dollar extra fee. So I gave him less tip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but if you're going to charge me a buck extra, then I'm going to take out a buck. Extra myself.
Yeah.
So the company, here's the news story I found. The company, Time Warner, says that the new fee is needed to make up for the cost of distributing and replacing the cable modems over time. So that fee apparently has not been included in your cable bill. Or probably has been, but we need a new fee anyway.
And it's just new wording.
Well, see, I remember that, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago when Frontier started doing it and we were all upset about it?
The simple reality is that none of these people feel that they are making enough money. So every little fee extra that they can charge us, they will.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply the way it is.
I think they only promised to take the sand out of the Vaseline.
Yeah, exactly.
And so there's always time for lube.
There's always time for lube.
It just won't hurt as bad.
Phil Dampier has a good article on Stop the Cap about this and what you can do about it and some links to Time Warner, so I'm going to post that as well.
One caller did call in and was wondering about the Computer Link magazine.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too when the ad ran. Apparently, from what we've heard, Justin Zimniak, who publishes Computer Link magazine, they've sort of taken a little hiatus, but they will be coming back soon.
Okay.
Don't know when, but soon.
Stay tuned.
Because I noticed it hasn't been on the store shelves.
That's what
like
the
I've
caller was saying. He went into one place that he normally gets it each month.
And the website hasn't been updated in a while.
And
but what was the quote they used?
Reorganizing, revamping,
and taking a break. But they'll be back.
Mm, okay.
Good for them.
Yeah. Hey. There's
nothing wrong with that.
Mm-mm.
Take the summer off.
Yeah, and it was one heck of a summer to have off.
One heck of a summer. I will say that.
I got to admit, this year was really great compared to the past two summers for me, personally. It was nice to get out on the bike and do quite a bit of riding. And that's motorcycle, not pedaling.
Yeah, right.
I could pedal, but I would hardly go out on that. But, it was just.
And you've got a trike.
Yeah.
So it's actually even easier to ride.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My age, heck yeah. I don't want to worry about falling down. I got one friend. She got hit by a deer.
On a motorcycle.
Yeah.
She was on the motorcycle, not the deer.
Right. She was going down the road and middle of the day. I think she said it was like 11 o'clock. And out of the woods, it must have been spooked, hit her and got her good.
Yeah, I bet. So even though we're coming up on fall, ladies and gentlemen, please be aware of the motorcyclists on the road, because you need to be aware that there are other people out there doing who have as much right to the road as you do, and be careful of them as you go along. Now, yes, some of them do stupid things, but that's some of them, not all of them. So be a little careful. All right. We've got a couple of minutes before we have to take a break, so let's at least start with Larry from Spencerport. Welcome, Larry. What's your question?
I have a question. There was an issue with the Java about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Are you familiar with that?
Well, with an update or with a hole in Java?
There was a hole in it, and yeah. I guess they said if you went to some websites, if you had Java, that they could infect your computer.
Yep.
Yeah, that happens
They recommended to remove it until it was fixed.
But that happens every couple of weeks, just like most of the internet languages, Java, Flash, Silverlight, everything. They find holes and patch them quite frequently. One of the things you can do is if you I never remember the site, so I just Google Java version. It will tell you what version of Java you're running and what the latest version of Java is. But one of the things that might be good for most users is just to uninstall Java. Not many websites are using Java, and if you don't need it, it's best to not have it installed so that you don't run into any of these exploit issues by not keeping it updated. Some of the major remote access programs like GoToMyPC and LogMeIn use Java, but if you're not using anything like that, you may not be needing it. One of the things that Apple has done with their Java is they automatically, they inactivate it. If you don't use a Java program in a while, they'll just turn it off on your system, and it can't run until you manually turn it back on.
Okay. Because I deleted it at the time, and then I was just waiting to see if I should put it back on or not. But you suggest if I don't need it, not to use it.
Yeah, pretty much. And if you go to a website that says it needs Java, it will probably want you to install it.
Yeah, right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And
and having trouble staying awake.
Are you? Yeah, I know, me too. So, want to highlight your wedding pictures or the first snapshots of your newborn on Facebook to make sure your friends don't miss the big news? Facebook announced on Wednesday that users in the U.S. will be able to promote their personal posts to friends for a fee. Although testing first started in New Zealand in May and has since rolled out to more than 20 countries, the feature is now available in the U.S. for the first time. The price... and that's actually water, not vodka, in that bottle.
Uh-huh.
The price to promote your news and updates, about $7. Business, and I believe that's each. Businesses are already able to promote their posts and get updates in front of more eyes for a fee, but personal updates still reach only limited numbers of friends on the site. Investing in a promoted post will increase the chance of someone seeing your post at the top of their news feed, the company said. Sometimes a particular friend might not notice your post, especially if a lot of their friends have been posting recently and your story isn't near the top of their feed, Facebook said in a blog post. When you promote a post, whether it's wedding photos, a garage sale, or big news, you bump it higher in news feeds so that your friends and subscribers are more likely to notice it. The option also may be of use to people looking to promote bands, parties, or other events. So what's your impression of personal promoted posts? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Personal promoted posts. $7.
Hey, they got to find other areas to hit revenue, make a profit.
Yep.
Personal be creative.
Yep.
Well, I guess if you got to make money, that's one way to do it.
It's like the Time Warner cable modem lease.
They
figure it's going to raise them $300 million a year. That's really good for the company.
That's great for the company.
If I were the company, I'd like that too. And by the way, we did find, thanks to a texter, we did find and post the link to the Time Warner approved cable routers. They cost between $50 and $150, depending on whether you want the DOSIS 2 or DOSIS 3. If you're running Roadrunner Turbo, you need DOSIS 3, and whether you want wireless in them or just wired. So for $395 a month, within a year, you'll have it paid for if you buy a basic one yourself.
Right.
Okay, stop it.
You're right. You're right. I did it this time. You're absolutely right. But Time Warner also no longer has to replace them if they're broken. It gives them one more chance to say, not our problem.
Yeah. One of the things we ran into in the beginning is that when you got your cable router or DSL router, it was basically set up to work with one computer. And when people started putting home routers in to have multiple computers and then wireless routers as well, the big question was always if you had to call for help, well, take your home router out of the line and plug your computer directly into the company router.
Right.
And if that works, it's not our problem. Go away.
Yep.
What we have seen over the last couple of years is both Frontier and Time Warner do help a little bit with home routers because pretty much everyone has them these days. But we may end up going back to that. If you buy your own cable router, it's not their fault. So if anything goes wrong, it's not them.
And they may well simply say, probably your router, replace it.
Right. Or you'll have to pay for a service call to have a technician come out and test with his router.
Right. I understand their need to make money. I get that. I want Google Fiber. That's what I want. I want Google Fiber, and I want it right now.
What do you want?
Google Fiber.
When do you want it?
Now.
Well, see,
Attica.
So you got to get a campaign going on the internet in the Rochester area. Get all our listeners and supporters.
Yeah, if you go to fiber.google.com, you can sign up and say you're interested.
Sign up. Everybody go to fiber.google.com.
We got to put a link on our homepage, our webpage.
Right.
We did.
It's there.
And we just got to start pumping it up more.
The more of you who go and say you're interested, the more likely it is that we will have Google Fiber here in Rochester.
And we should explain to the folks what the benefits of having fiber here would do for them.
Ridiculously fast.
Free for anybody, was it 5 megabytes or less?
5 megabytes, 5 megabits.
Megabits, rather.
Right.
Which is your average slow DSL or Roadrunner.
Right.
Well, DSL or Roadrunner is slow.
Right. And basically what happens is there's really three tiers. Okay, you get... there's the standard tier. I don't want to know that. I just want to see what you have. There we go. Gigabit internet, gigabit per second internet. Right now we have multiples of a megabit per second.
10 being a standard.
10 being a standard, and you can get gigabit.
Which is 1,000.
Which is 1,000, exactly.
You can have 10 or you can have 1,000.
Right. And that's symmetrical. So it's 1,000 gigabits, it's 1,000 bits per second up and 1,000 bits per second down. And that would cost $70 a month. $70 a month. If you want to add television to it, and they have every channel except BBC America, so I don't want it yet, it's only $120 a month.
Well, it's okay because Doctor Who is on hiatus till the Christmas special.
That's true, but I don't want to get it now and hope that they get it in time. Yeah. And if you want free internet, it's not entirely free, you have to pay a $300 construction fee or $25 a month for a year. So, because they're waiving the construction fee if you get the $70 a month or the $120 a month deal. But if you actually want free internet, you have to pay to have it brought to your house. That's fair.
And a free router.
Right, and you get a free router. So there's a lot there. If you get, in fact, the full Google experience, you get a gigabit of upload and download, the TV channel lineup, you have a two-year contract, no data caps, no data caps. If you get the TV thing, they also throw in a Nexus 7 tablet, the TV, yeah, you get a tablet with it, a TV box, a storage box, which has a terabyte of storage in it, the network box that connects you to the network, and you get a 1 terabyte Google Drive storage space. So you can take all your computers and back them up onto the storage box that Google gives you, and then throw all of that up on your Google Drive to have it backed up in space.
And then the Nexus 7 tablet is your remote control.
It is your remote control.
And your TV guide and your programming
everything.
List and your everything.
So it's $120 a month, plus, of course, taxes and fees. And if you just get the gigabit internet, then you get 1 gigabit upload and download, no data caps. It's a one-year contract. They waive the construction fee. You get the network box, and you still get the terabyte Google Drive. It's $70 a month plus taxes. It's ridiculously cheap for what it is you're getting, gigabit connectivity. If you think the internet flies now, you ain't seen nothing yet. It's an amazing thing, and I want it in Rochester, and you can all help. Go to google.fiber.com and sign up, or fiber.google.com, and say that you're interested and that you would love to know when it's coming to your area.
Right now it's only available in Kansas City, both Kansas and Missouri, but they're hoping to expand it to other cities across the country. So the more people that are interested, the more and faster it may expand.
But it's all in Kansas right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
they won that stupid contest.
Yeah, and I want to know why we didn't win. I have high friends in low places, and they didn't do a thing for us, dag nabum.
Was it the city of Kansas City, Kansas, changed their name to Google Kansas for the promotion?
I know.
Google picked them.
I know. But we have all that dark fiber here in Monroe County, and if we offered that to them at a discount or gave it to them or whatever, what are we doing with it? If it's dark fiber, it's dark fiber.
Yeah, dark fiber is fiber lines that are already run, but they're not being used. And fiber is really, really, really fast connections. That's how they're able to get a gigabit out of it.
It's light.
With the copper wire we normally have with cable and DSL, I think Time Warner's fastest speed they offer is 50 megabits. So that's still a lot slower than 1,000 megabits.
Yeah, right. Just a little slower.
Well, it's like it's the modem days. We got 50K on our modem, and then suddenly we could get 10,000K on our cable internet, and that was a huge jump.
Right. There's also some researchers who have created the big bottleneck for fiber is the boxes at the end of the fiber.
Yeah.
Because they're now mechanical again. Right? I mean, they're electronic is what they are. But now somebody's created data switches out of light. So it's thousands of times faster
probably
than
Corning.
Electronic. I don't remember.
Corning is one of the biggest manufacturers of fiber.
Yes, but this was a researcher somewhere in a lab somewhere. So that promises to increase even the ridiculous speed of fiber. So sign. I want Google Fiber. I don't care about you. I want it. So help me by signing up for it yourself by saying you're interested. All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to those of you who did not get through. Next week, call earlier and often. It's the Chicago style of calling in. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. George is coming in. He's going to be playing the best German music you've heard all week. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.